What's up, St. Louis? It's your host, Luke Farrell of the STL Bucket List Show. The STL Bucket List Show is driven by Bomarito Automotive Group. Bomarito is Missouri's number one car dealership with over 20 locations, so I guarantee that there's one in your neighborhood. Since the 1970s, Bomarito has sold over 1 million cars, and John and the entire team made us feel completely comfortable when we picked up our new vehicle recently for the family. So I can't thank the Bomarito team enough for driving this episode forward, and enjoy the show. For 50 years, Bankhead & Firth Orthodontics has been proudly serving the vibrant St. Louis community. As a family-owned and operated practice since day one, the commitment to excellence and personalized care runs deep. They believe in giving back to the wonderful people of St. Louis who have entrusted them with their smiles. Step into the five locations across St. Louis with modern offices equipped with the latest orthodontic technology. Their three amazing doctors are dedicated to providing top-notch, innovative treatments tailored just for you. Join us in celebrating 50 years with Bankhead & Firth Orthodontics, where your family becomes a part of theirs. Schedule your free consultation today and let them help you achieve the confident, gorgeous smile that you deserve. Because in St. Louis, your smile is your legacy.
If you want to hear about St. Louis, tune into the Bucket List Show weekly. Hear what Marissa and Luke say. It drops every Wednesday. Got a dope new guest every single week. Buckle up for the ride. Who's it gonna be? Who's on the show today? They rep St. Louis. What to do in the loo on a late night, or maybe what to do on a date night? Yeah, Bucket List has you covered. They know what's going on. What's going on? They'll give you, hey, 18 different things to do, or 19 if you need one more to choose. Yeah, this city is a place we call home. A place we call home. Yeah.
What's up, St. Louis? Welcome back to the STL Bucket List Show. I'm your host, Luke Farrell. My wife, Marissa, is not with us. She is still on maternity leave, but she will be back soon. Our episodes are going to continue. We're on episode 111 this week. We really couldn't do the podcast if it wasn't for our studio, Half Coast Studios, but also our sponsors over at the Regional Arts Commission of St. Louis, Four Hands Brewing Company, Bomarito Automotive Group, St. Louis Closet Company, and our new sponsors over at Tecovas Western Boots, which is a new boot store inside of Park of the Front Neck Mall. So shout out to all of our sponsors for making the show possible, and we're going to continue to highlight the people, places, and events that make St. Louis special. So I want to get into it today. We have a entrepreneur in the studio today. We have a business owner, somebody that's done stuff in a variety of different industries, now finds himself in the cannabis industry. So we have Ham Hamra on the episode today. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm doing well. We've been trying to get you on here for a minute. I know a lot of people have been talking about you. You guys have been absolutely crushing it at Route 66. But before we get into that, I want to learn a little bit more about your story. So your roots to St. Louis, you know, take us back when you were growing up. Where'd you grow up at? You know, where'd you, everybody wants to know, where'd you go to high school at? All that stuff. So give us a little background on you and kind of what led you to here.
That's such a famous question. It's funny you say that because that's exactly what the first thing I heard when I moved to St. Louis. So I was born in Iran. I always say, people say, what are you? I say, I'm Persian. It just sounds like a little bit, sexy and fancy at the same time. But I moved here when I was six. We really moved here because of the war in our country between Iran and Iraq. And we were fortunate enough to leave like really the day before the airport shut down for 8 years.
Wow.
And that was called, you know, the revolution. And when that happened, like, nobody got out. And I just remember when we left, you know, I didn't know what we were doing because, you know, my dad didn't tell me much.
You were six, you said at this
time?
I
was six, yeah. Okay. And six and a half, I was little. And I just remember the few nights before, like, you could see, like, fighter jets in the air and people are fighting and city lights will go down. You know, you hear tornado sirens here, you hear bomb warnings there. And we moved to Germany and we had family there. And I just, again, I had no idea where we were going. And the first place we landed was El Dorado, Kansas, because that's where my uncle lived at the time. And you talk about being in a strange world. I mean, of all the places in the world you could live, El Dorado, Kansas.
Yeah.
Not exactly like the coolest place.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't speak any English. And my dad put me in first grade. So I was upset about that because it was like repeating first grade. I had already done first grade once and that was a whole ordeal. Mm-hmm. And from there, my dad, because he worked for the American government and was living in Iran. So we were here. And now he was starting a whole new venture. Got in with my uncle in the college food service industry. And he would take every promotion. So we would move around a lot. So when you say, like, where'd you grow up? That's like a loaded question because I lived everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So I lived in Snyder, Texas. I lived in Columbia, Missouri. We lived in Davenport, Iowa. I lived in Salina, Kansas. Mm-hmm. Eventually made Miami home for a while. And in my ninth grade year, Beginning of ninth grade year, we moved to Columbia, Missouri, because that's where my uncle lived. Mm-hmm. And that's about how I kind of got to St. Louis. I ended up going to Mizzou. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, I'm in St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah.
And
that's a wild ride.
It's a wild ride. So I gave you the fast version of that.
Yeah.
And here I am in St. Louis, you know, what, almost 24 years. Yeah.
So what, tell me about the challenges that you had. Cause a lot of people that we have on the podcast are from St. Louis. You know, they have these connections, they have these people that they grew up with, but tell us about some of those challenges when you were learning English. You were an immigrant family. Tell us about some of those challenges that you faced growing up. Cause especially in Kansas, you're probably, you know, didn't see many people that looked like you were at all. You know?
I stuck out like a sore thumb, right? First of all, growing up, I wanted to be blonde hair, blue eyes. Cause everyone around me was blonde hair, blue eyes,
exactly.
Right? And, you know, I don't have like the most common name because my name is Hamid. Mm-hmm. And then that just kind of became like a nickname. Ham became my nickname mm-hmm. through college. And it just kind of stuck with me. My mom will call me Ham once in a while, but very rarely.
Yeah.
But it was challenging, right? Because A, you don't speak English. So I missed out on recess, right? I'm going to bring back my childhood. I was a little upset that I didn't get to go to recess. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you start to learn English and then, you know, you're not the cool kid, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, my parents were doing the best they can because they left their family behind, their homes, their cars, all the valuables, because they just wanted freedom, right? And that's why I love this country so much, because, you know, freedom. Mm-hmm. And it was wild because I always make a joke. We would go to Sears, and no knock on Sears, but, like, that's where my mom would buy our clothes. Mm-hmm. And then she would wonder why I go to school and kids would make fun of me because I'm like, one section they're selling, like, lawnmowers. Next section they're selling sweater vests. Like, can we at least go to JCPenney's, right?
Yes, yes.
We step it up one notch. Mm-hmm. Or Walmart or Target, mm-hmm. anything, you know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so it was rough. I got picked on a lot growing up, and I think I used humor as the years went on.
Yeah.
When people say you're a little sarcastic or you're witty, mm-hmm. I used that as my way of out.
To deal with, like, uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, I did, honestly. And that was my way of breaking the ice with people, and I found that having a sense of humor and being funny actually made you somewhat cool
mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know how else to, like, not stick out.
Right.
And when I finally felt at home was actually Miami, Florida, right? Now, still growing up, I had no idea that majority of the people were, like, you know, from another country, mostly Cuba and mm-hmm. Puerto Rico. And you've got, like, it's a giant melting pot there, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of dark hair, mm-hmm. right? So I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
But then it was like, do you speak Spanish? I'm like, I do not.
Yeah. So there you go again.
I speak Farsi. And a language that I still practice, you know, speaking with my parents and some family members.
Yeah.
So that was interesting until we moved to Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah.
And then I was like, here we go again.
Now you're in high school at this time.
I'm in high school.
You're driving, you're dating girls, you're doing all these
things. Yeah, there was no dating back then at all. I came from a traditional family. Yeah. It wasn't cool. But it was funny because when we left Miami, it was during the Vanilla Ice, MC Hammer stage, if you can recall, if you're old enough.
Well, I was born in 1995, so that was probably right around
but
that
you've
time.
Heard of him.
Yeah, I know Vanilla Ice and a Local J.
So
absolutely.
I had a few lines in my hair, I had my Mercedes gold chain. I guess not much has changed with the chain stuff, but
If you guys are watching on YouTube, he's got the little pot leaf chain.
Yeah,
on
I got
right
the
now.
Pot leaf chain to support the business. But it was cool, and that's where I made a lot of cool friends, and I worked all the time. So I started working when I was 15,
mm-hmm.
so I didn't have much of a social life
right.
Until, like, you know, college,
mm-hmm.
and that was different, obviously. But
So what did you study at Mizzou then?
Business finance and
business
marketing.
Finance. Yeah. So lead us to your entrepreneurial journey, because a lot of the people that we have on the podcast, you know, come on the podcast for different reasons. We're focusing on highlighting the people, places, and events that make St. Louis special. You're not from St. Louis, but now you're investing in the community. You have 5 locations. You had other businesses before this. Yeah. So tell us, you know, how old were you? When did you start becoming fascinated with entrepreneurship, or were you in the corporate world for a little bit too?
I have been fascinated with entrepreneurship and being in business since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I go back and look at my pictures, birthday pictures, and I'm flipping, you know, baseball cards and toys and Laffy Taffys and baseball. I mean, everything. You imagine it, I always try to figure out how to, like, sell.
Yeah.
And I do actually feel like I'm from St. Louis because I've now almost lived majority of my life in St. Louis, right? Mm-hmm. I'm about to turn 48, so 23 years in St. Louis.
Right.
And I consider St. Louis home.
In Mizzou, like a lot of St. Louis kids went to Mizzou. So
Correct.
You've been around those people for, you know, almost 30 years now.
Yeah, just been around that for so long.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to be in sales. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. My dad was really pushing me to be, you know, a doctor. A lot of my family members are doctors. It's just not my thing. I don't like needles. I don't like blood. It's just, you know, I would be an awful doctor, right? Just an awful doctor. And my first gig out of school was in corporate America. And, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I worked for a company called Beneficial Finance. And it was in mortgages, right? And I had no idea what I was selling, right? I wasn't even a homeowner. I lived in River de Pere, if anybody knows where that is.
Yeah, I'm a South City guy.
Yeah, I had a great little apartment that faced the cemetery. Yeah. Talk about a wake-up call every morning.
Right on Gravois, Limay over there.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, not far from Ted Drew's. Mm-hmm. That's when I got introduced to Ted Drew's. I was like, oh, this is nice. And, man, you know, you wake up and you get motivated and, you know, I was selling mortgages. I had no idea what I was doing. And it was a subprime era. But I knew, like, that's not what I want to do forever. And eventually I kind of just kind of grew my way into the mortgage industry and then ended up building a team. And fast forward, I had built, you know, a company for a company, you know, in the Midwest, you know, called New American Funding.
Yep.
And built that up to a very high level. And while that was happening, you know, I had other businesses. You know, I was always investing in something. I actually invested in music studios that failed. I invested in some properties that failed. And, you know, so I say that because everyone thinks if you're just an entrepreneur, like it's instant gold. You start a new business and you're rich. Yeah. That's not true.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely a roller coaster. And I think that a lot of the times without podcasts and all these new platforms that we have, people wouldn't know about all those failures that people really have. Now we have access to so many books and so many people that we can listen to. You can flip on Instagram and you can get insight from Tony Robbins, from Gary Vaynerchuk, all these guys that are doing the things that you want to do.
Correct.
When you guys were starting out, you know, 20 years ago, you could find a book, but they weren't as accessible as they are now, you know, to get knowledge.
I couldn't even imagine when I was going to school if we had Instagram. And I think the kids use Snapchat and
TikTok
and all this stuff. You know, I'm not a snapper. I just use Instagram and Facebook. I'm more on Instagram. I like the stories.
Yep.
But just a form of communication, like whether it's like staying in touch with friends, knowing each other's birthdays, or you want to sell a product. I mean, talk about a platform that we didn't have. I mean, back then, if you were going to talk to a girl, you write a note on a cocktail napkin at a bar.
Yeah.
You pray she would keep your number. Then you race home. And then you would make sure the line stayed empty because no one trusts call waiting. And caller ID had just, I think, come on board. Mm-hmm. And then you sit by a phone because
you never hear. And then you're like, all right, it's done.
So disappointment was pretty high back then versus like a text message or a voice text or whatever goes on these days, you know, DMs.
It's so easy to stay connected. But then you think of kids growing up now. It's like you're too connected to where you're seeing what kids are doing in other cities and states. And they might live this amazing life. And it makes you feel a type
too much
of way.
Connection. No.
You know, like when you're growing up in Columbia in high school, you only knew what your neighbors were doing. You know, and that was it. So it's a different world. But we've built our business on social media and really creating community. So I want to hear more about how you went from mortgages to cannabis because, you know, those two things don't really coincide with each other. I mean, in a real estate point of view, maybe that's about it.
I think a lot of people in the mortgage and real estate world smoke a lot of cannabis. They just don't tell you about it. They're also big drinkers.
Yeah.
It's a very stressful job. It's interesting you asked me that. It actually was a dare, right? I just remember it was a little over 5 years ago. I had heard that marijuana might become on the ballot for medical in Missouri, and there were kind of people were rallying behind it. I had never smoked in high school or college, which is kind of funny because I'm still not a huge smoker. I dabble, which we can get into that.
Yeah.
But it was never my thing, right? Obviously, with traditional parents, it was a stigma. And I just remember so I brought it up, and a friend of mine said, yeah, can you believe that this is going to, you know, possibly happen? I was like, that could be a big business if done right. And I understand business just because of how many times I failed. And they were like, yeah, like the guy that's never, you know, tried a drug in his life is suddenly going to run a cannabis company. And of course, you know how guys are. You joke around and they made fun of me and we moved on to the next subject. But then I started driving home and it kind of like pissed me off a little bit. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to look into it, right? And I did, and I called a consultant, I called a lobbyist, I called people in the industry that were kind of like behind it. And I was like, well, maybe I'll just dabble a little bit. And honestly, it was a real estate flip for me. I was like, if I can just win one license, I can prove to my friends I did it, so it's an accomplishment. I'll turn around and sell the license, make a few bucks, and move on with my life. Continue to sell mortgages. little did I know how expensive this business would be as far as the investment of building it, right? To get to just the application stage of like filing with the state. So that alone, it was like a bad hand of poker.
Mm-hmm.
You keep getting sucked in, and next thing you know, you're all in, and you're like, I hope I win.
Right. You can't do anything from there. And you got to keep going.
You just, yeah. And so as it got like very expensive towards the end, a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, you just talk to yourself in your head or out loud. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just be doing mortgages until I'm like 90 because I'm never going to get out of this hole.
Right.
And I remember the state did it in three different stages. It started out with cultivation, and then it went to manufacturing, and then it went to dispensary, giving out the licenses.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was at the office, I shut my door, and I'm just sitting there patiently waiting for this email, and I knew it was coming. And the first email came, and it said, sorry, the state of Missouri, to notify you, you did not win, or you've not been awarded a license. So I was like, oh, like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then another email, because I applied for three, another email comes, and it was like the same thing. Sorry, thanks for applying, but you didn't win anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, I'm 0-2. So I call my attorney and he's like, hey man, I'm sorry. I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm not holding an asset in my hand. You know, I've blown seven figures on paper. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to have to go in the trash at this point. Cause like my mindset was, if I'm not even going to win one, I'm not going to win anything.
Exactly.
And he was like, sorry, we tried.
This is cultivating first.
This is just, yeah. Cause it came like every 2 weeks was like when the responses were coming. And it was like a couple hours later, I was already off my email. I was like, whatever. I'm in a really bad mood, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but just more like disappointed
failure.
In myself.
Yeah.
And here comes this email that says, congratulations, you've been awarded a license. I'm like, whoa, like what just happened here? So I'm on the phone, I'm calling him. I'm like, can you believe it? He's like, this is a good start. This is a really good start. You got one.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, I did it. Mm-hmm. I prove I can do it. I'm still probably going to be in the red because I applied for so many. I applied for 11, which was the most you can apply for.
Mm-hmm.
Five dispensaries, three cultivations, three manufacturing. 2 weeks later, it's manufacturing time. And here comes the emails. And I'm 3-3. I win all three.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So, like, I have two out of the three cards that I need to be a full vertical, which is a very prestigious license to have. Because I think there's only 24 verticals in the state of Missouri. And 2 weeks later after that, here we go again, and it's dispensary time. And the first one's like, sorry, no go.
Mm-hmm.
Second one was like, congratulations. I was like, I'm a full vertical.
Right.
Third one was no go. And then the next two were like, congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm like, okay, I've got three dispensaries, three manufacturing, and one cultivation. So I'm at seven.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like celebrating around me, and then it hits me. Oh my God, I have a real company on my hands. Now what am I going to do?
Like, I have to invest more and build this.
This isn't a real estate flip anymore. Like, this is a lot of licenses. Like, what am I going to do here?
Yeah.
So I had to start putting my thinking hat, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to go raise money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm coming from an industry where I'm used to loaning people money to now calling you and asking for money. Big difference in the world of like money, right?
Right.
And so, like, I had already kind of prepared, so I put a pitch deck together, and I start calling all the people that I knew that had, you know, money to invest, and I had two different categories. It was either $150 minimum for Class C or $500,000 for Class B. And I went to my first client, and I did my pitch in a boardroom, and I failed at it miserably. I'd never asked anyone for a penny. And they looked at me and were like, we don't even know what you're talking about. It's 160 pages here.
Yeah.
And you expect us to just know this? Like, you're the one pitching
and
us.
This is a new industry for a lot of these people. A lot of these people are way over their head. They're like, cannabis.
Correct. And when people think of cannabis, they just automatically assume you're rich. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just going to, like, money's just going to fall from the sky, which, by the way, it's not like that, right? It can be, but it's not like that in the beginning, especially, because we were going into the medical market. And so, my investor was very sweet and was like, listen, I believe in you. So why don't you kind of get it together and repitch me?
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And they were our first investor. Mm-hmm. And it was above and beyond what I was asking for, you know, the two different slots. And that gave me a little momentum.
Yeah.
And while this was happening, I started thinking, why didn't I win all 11? Like, what did I do wrong? Like, they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So the grading system didn't work with me. So I decided to kind of go after the state of Missouri and say, hey, how come I didn't win? Like, what happened here? And, you know, they're like, you know, you can appeal this and you can file. And I did. And we ended up settling with two more licenses. So I ended up winning another dispensary and another cultivation. Mm-hmm. And then I want to say, like, we had already raised enough money to kind of get the company off the ground, plus whatever I had put in. Mm-hmm. And there was another group that just wasn't going to do anything with their license, the dispensary license. So we ended up buying that one.
Yeah, I was going to ask where you got the fifth one at.
So that's how it happened. Yeah. So the fifth one was bought. And so, yeah, I have five dispensaries now. I have a we sold one of our cultivation licenses because we didn't need it. Because one cultivation license allows you to have up to 1 million square feet.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. But one... manufacturing license. But mm-hmm. one cultivation license allows you to have 30,000 square feet, and that's that you get maxed out. Mm-hmm. So we ended up selling a few that we just, you know, it was just didn't make sense to have.
Right.
And, you know, today we've got a full-blown operation. So we grow everything indoor and outdoor, believe mm-hmm. it or not, in Cuba, Missouri.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's one of our lines that we have. It's called the Cubana line, which was named by our staff out there, which I just
love. Your ties to Miami, too.
Yeah. But they named it, so they get all the credit.
Yeah.
And we basically, I had to go hunting for like amazing staff. And we've got some of the most knowledgeable managers from Colorado market and the California market. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know where I would be without them because they know it all. Right. I'm just more behind the scenes, mm-hmm. like directing a little bit of traffic here and there. We have an amazing president that runs our company, amazing salespeople both inside and outside. Mm-hmm. So we do wholesale and we do retail.
Yeah.
And I believe we're like, I want to say about 120 to 140, depending on the week, in other dispensaries where we sell our Ostara product lines, mm-hmm. which is our gummies. I brought some for you. They're non-medicated, obviously.
Darn.
This is not the place we probably want to hit edibles and continue the show.
Exactly.
The pizza delivery halfway through it. But it's been a fun ride. Yeah. It's a stressful ride because then COVID happened, as you recall. Mm-hmm. So it didn't go on the ballot for another year because think about it. When you're in the height of COVID, try knocking on someone's door and handing them a pen.
Exactly.
I wouldn't do it, right? And it doesn't even matter which side your political mm-hmm. views are.
Right.
You don't know enough about, you know, the virus. Mm-hmm. I wasn't opening my door for anybody, right? Yeah. And ball games weren't happening really, and mm-hmm. everyone had masks, and you couldn't, like, go to, you know, concerts. I mean, we all recall all those days, mm-hmm. right? So that delayed by a year, which was very expensive because the medical market just makes no money, right? Yeah. It's just not enough, mm-hmm. right? So we just kept putting more into it. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I'm never going to get out of mortgages. I'm going to be in this forever.
So you were still in mortgages and cannabis at the same time.
I was.
And you just recently left the mortgage.
I just recently retired. So I want to say, my goodness, maybe 8 months now.
Okay.
I'm going on it, maybe a little bit less.
So then you went even more all in. You're like, all right, I'm going back. Yeah.
I did. And I love my mortgage friends. I love the real estate market. I still have a lot of real estate agents that I'm friends with, a lot of loan officers. It's a tough business. It wears you out. There's a huge difference between mortgage and real estate and cannabis. Mm-hmm. In the mortgage industry, you're tied to a deadline daily. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're a homeowner or not, but it happens. Like, you know, you're closing in a week.
Yep.
And believe it or not, a lot of things happen within closing time. Someone goes and runs credit and buys a washer and dryer, buys a new car, and they were already tight on their debt-to-income ratios. They lose their job, unfortunately. A lot of things happen. We've had deaths in the family. So you're always on edge, right, until mm-hmm. the closing date. And I'm sure real estate agents are even more on edge
right.
because they're counting on you to fund their project. Mm-hmm. And the amount of emails I would get, because I had almost 200 employees. So the amount of emails you get daily at night, you can just not even think about vacation.
Weekend, Saturday, every Saturday.
Yeah, your vacations Sunday. Are awful. It's It could be very harmful if you have a family, which mm-hmm. was for me. I mean, because you're always tied to your phone. Mm-hmm. Even on my, you know, at the time when I was married on my honeymoon, like I took a mortgage application. You know, it's just, right. it's awful if you really think about it. Mm-hmm. You're just tied to this phone. Mm-hmm. And it's nonstop. So you go from that, right? And it's very cutthroat. You know, everyone's trying to get real estate agents business and title companies. I mean, it's very doggy dog out there. Mm-hmm. Then you go into the cannabis world and you might get like five or six emails a day. Mm-hmm. and 90% of them were very happy emails. Like, hey, we have a new product. Does anyone want to try it? Or we're about to get into this new office or this new dispensary. Or we have a pop-up. Or we have a festival coming up.
Do you want to sponsor this? Or, you know,
yeah, we have a parade coming up. Yeah. Or let's do a podcast. Like, this is fun, right? And so, like, I'm slowly reverse aging and getting my health back. And because it really, 23 years in that industry at a high level, it broke me. Like, I had enough.
And then when you really think about it, you think about real estate, it's like, you're selling, but then the next month it restarts again, and then you have to sell again and then again and again. It's like what you're doing now with Route 66 is you're building a legacy, you're building a business that can live forever past you.
Correct.
You know, which you could in real estate and all that, but it's like it always relies on you to fill out that last final application.
Absolutely. Well, think of it this way.
You can't pass down that job, but you can pass down Route 66 to your kids and everything like that.
Correct. So, yeah. Well, look at it this way. Like, I'm your loan officer, you and your wife, right? Mm-hmm. You buy a house from me, right? You know, I do the financing. More than likely, I'm going to do my best to stay in touch with you with emails, birthday cards, and all that good stuff. But you're not buying a house every week.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Not every 5, 10, 15 years. Yeah.
You know, I think the average American in their homes is somewhere between 3 to 5 years if touching the loan, meaning whether they're going to refinance it or they're going to buy a new house. They're either going to upsize or downsize, right? Well, in the world of cannabis, if you try one of our gummies and you like it and it's a 10-pack, it's like buying eggs, bread, milk, anything else. You go back.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a good product,
right,
people go back. And then you start to figure out, how do I have market share? Like, how do I stand out against my competition?
Right.
Which competition is healthy, I think, for all businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Much different business model, right?
No, absolutely. And I think that you have a unique perspective coming from the business world. I think a lot of the people in Missouri cannabis probably came from similar worlds, different types of corporations. But how do you think that, like, what challenges did you face in that? Because, like you said, you weren't using the product, so you didn't know much about it. You, you know, you're expected to grow this amazing product and package it and do all this design and make it look good. Like, what challenges did you have? How did you have to hand off stuff? Because you had to delegate a lot of stuff. In the mortgage industry, you're like, I could do this from front to back and finish
because
this.
I had done it all on the mortgage side.
Yeah.
On the cannabis side, you really rely on the people that you've hired that are the experts. And then you have to also be a student and you have to humble yourself and you have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no other way around it, right? And I'm the first one in meetings to raise my hand and say, I don't know what that means. You know, like, what's a wax? What's a dab, right?
Right.
I know what it means now, but at the time I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what's life resin? You know, like, what does that mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does it affect me? You know, like, how does it affect me when I take, you know, edible and then eat versus eating and then take an edible? Like, every aspect of this is new to me, but I'm smart enough to know I stay out of everyone's hair, right? Like, when it's go time, like, and they're like, this is really good and it's testing at this percentage of THC and that's a good sign.
Yeah.
I just have to trust them, and I do, right?
No, that's interesting. So you, this has been a 5-year journey. You know, you got five locations. You know, what does the future look like? Because you only have those five locations. Do you just double down on what you have, get better? Like, what does that look like for you?
You know, that's probably like the most common question I get asked in the industry. And I would like to expand. My goal is to buy other dispensaries that maybe are struggling a little bit. Or just are not run properly. And there's a few out there, but there's a lot of good ones that, I mean, we partner with them. They do a great job. But I would love to buy additional dispensaries. And if the location is not good, you know, within reason, you can have those locations relocated with the state because they're not handing out any more licenses, you know. And that's what I love about Missouri. It's what you see is what you get, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not oversaturated like Oklahoma or California or Colorado, because that is what eventually happened, and that's really bad for business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my goal is to grow it, but I'm very strategic. Those that work with me on a daily basis know, as much as this is a risky business and I took all these risks, I'm also conservative when it comes to the money being spent, because my goal was to go debt-free. My goal was having jobs for everyone, being able to afford raises and other benefits. And those are the directions we've been going, right? And that was our goal last year, is pay everything off. And we were able to accomplish that. And some people are complete opposite. They have these elaborate grow facilities. They're nice. They're amazing. I mean, just like a Lamborghini, it's beautiful. But, you know, my car will get me from point A to point B also, right? And I'm not here to knock on them. That's just the approach I took, because if I was going to grow it, I can't sleep at night knowing I owe a lot of people a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It won't work for me personally.
Yeah,
right?
I feel that.
And so, yeah, that's our next goal, to see where this thing goes.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, when it became recreational, I mean, just looking at the sales, like billions of dollars or $1 billion. In,
it's like
in Missouri,
1.2 billion. Four, roughly. Yeah. That's what it ended up being.
Crazy. And I mean, what that does and like what the money does after that. But you mentioned like employees and building team and, you know, now you have employees and you're taking care of families, which you did in the mortgage industry. But now you have a little bit more control because it's your business. The mortgage Correct. Industry, had so many different things are outside of your control.
And I still report to someone, even though I was an executive VP and I sat, you
exactly.
know, out of 5,000 people, I was like number three in the company and sitting mm-hmm. at a high level table.
Right.
Still wasn't my company. Right. And I learned a lot, and I mm-hmm. think they're amazing owners, mm-hmm. my previous employer, and they've done a fantastic job of growing that business, but it still wasn't mine, right? And, mm-hmm. and at some point, you're like, if you're an entrepreneur, now, not everybody wants to be an entrepreneur, they don't want the risk.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a good feeling when you know you've created jobs, especially in Cuba, Missouri. I mean, we've brought a lot of economic relief to Cuba, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really small town.
It's a very small town, but, man, they're great people, yeah. And it's such a cool little place.
My wife's uncle, Darren, he owns the burger shop out there. What's it called? The Famous Rich's Burgers. Rich's Famous Burgers.
I've heard of it, right.
Yeah, Darren, yeah. He has...
And there's like a barbecue place,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I should probably pay attention more to the names because yeah. I'm always just starving and I'm like, where can I just eat?
Yeah, Rich's Famous Burgers. If you know Tecovas, you know that they make some of the best and most comfortable Western boots around. But what you might not know is that Tecovas has a store right here in St. Louis at Plaza Front Neck. Stop into their store and you'll find the finest handmade cowboy boots, jeans, belts, cowboy hats, and even apparel for both men and women. While you shop, enjoy complimentary drinks, boot shines, custom hat and boot branding, and more. Come visit the Tecovas store at Plaza Front Neck and let them help you find your new favorite pair of boots or your first pair of boots ever. Tecovas. Don't go gently. But yeah, like that's what people don't understand. They think that you guys are just selling weed or you're selling marijuana or like all this. It's like you're providing jobs. You're providing that most importantly jobs, but you're also providing tax benefits to some Correct. Of these areas that need it the most.
Well, for me also was I love plant-based anything, right? Yeah. And so what most people don't really realize with the marijuana industry, the cannabis industry, there's so many benefits. There's so many people that come in there that really need it, mm-hmm. right? It's for, you know, they have depression or they're, you know, they have cancer and they just need pain relief.
Mm-hmm.
Loss of appetite. There's a lot of benefits of mm-hmm. cannabis. And I got to say, that's probably the most satisfying thing when a patient comes in, right? And they're a true medical card holder, not because they just want to have a card,
right?
Because they want to just, you know, have a little party on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And watching our managers and our butt tenders take care of them and taking the time to listen to their needs
mm-hmm.
and directing them on what they could really use and watching them say thank you and coming back and saying that's helped me so much.
Right.
That's actually more satisfying than, you know, selling to a few people that want to just go out for the night. Now, mm-hmm. I get it. It's a business, right? And mm-hmm. it's with anything. But that part excites me the most because I know what we have inside of our you know, our joints or our flower and all that, you know, it's the way we're growing it. It's, you know, it's not like big pharma where we have a bunch of things. And then 10 years later, you know, like if you had lost a hair and you lost yeah. an eyeball or your
There's
ear fell off,
coming out. Yeah.
call us and we'll get you $10 million. Like, I don't have to worry about those kind of stuff. Right. Yeah. And that's the most satisfying thing because I know what's in it.
Yeah. I think that is beautiful. When you actually believe in what you're selling is a huge part of making yourself successful, making
Correct.
You be able, you mentioned sleep at night, you know, that helps you sleep at night when you're doing something that's actually worthwhile. But I wanted to go back to the stigma that you talked about. You grew up with a traditional family. When you got into cannabis, that's not something that parents are proud of typically, that their son has a cannabis company. So how did you tell us about those moments when you're talking to your parents or your family and they're like, yeah, Mom, I got a cannabis company. They're like, what?
Well, when I told my dad, and my dad is an amazing man and I owe everything to my parents, especially my dad who yeah. has taken all the risk, like leaving our country. Right. Mm-hmm. And my dad still calls it grass, you know, cause he yeah. went to college here in the United States in the 70s. So he was like, so you're going to start selling grass. And my dad is not anywhere near what I do as far as risk taking, right? Mm-hmm. My dad is a little bit more conservative, right? And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to know where everything's at every day so he can sleep better at night. And I love him for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit of a wild card in the family. Mm-hmm. And when I told him that, he was like, listen, you're doing really good with mortgages. Just stick to the plan and finish the ride.
Yeah, you got like a few years left and you'd have been, you could have been retired already.
Correct. And I said, I don't want to finish this ride. I want to jump off this roller coaster and I want to start a new roller coaster. Mm-hmm. But what I love about my parents, are always supportive. And he was like, well, if that's what you want to do. And now, of course, like it's grown and he sees it and he's extremely proud. You know, will I get them to use cannabis? I don't know. They're in Florida, so I can't ship it to them. So, you know, I will attempt. But my dad's not a drinker. I mean, maybe a glass of wine here and there. My mom the same. So for me to say here, like, let's get lit together, it's probably a stretch. But they understand. But they do like the creams. Like, and when they came to visit me in St. Louis, like, you know, like for joint pain and all that. I mean, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to like that stigma, because even like, even people your age in your 40s, they're like, well, it's still that stigma. Now when you have people that are younger in their 20s, they're used to it a little bit more, you know. But even as when I was in high school, you know, we were getting extremely big fines, extremely big tickets, 90 days kicked out of school, like just for having a baddie or a joint or something like that. Like that was only 5-10 years ago. So it's like the amount that it's changed, and I think people's mindsets are going around it. Less people do drink alcohol now just because of the, you know, side effects that alcohol
has. It's funny you say that. Yeah. That is a true statement. Yeah. And shout out to all the soccer moms out there, because we are seeing like our star tabs, which are 5 milligrams. It's like a little bit more of a micro dosing. Mm-hmm. It's like a little Pez. Chewable candy,
just a little buzz, not too much.
It's not too much. Like these that I brought. These come in 10 milligrams plus, and a little bit stronger.
Yeah,
depending on which ones you take. But we've all been to sporting events for kids, and we see, you know, dads or moms having a glass of wine or a beer, and a lot of parents are coming in. They're just buying edibles, and they're just taking one, and then they're just drinking water or, you know, a fun drink that's non-alcoholic, and they're more chill. I mean, it's maybe the referees should thank me, because there's less parents yelling at them.
Exactly.
Right? And also St. Louis should thank, you know, the industry, because I'm sure food sales have gone up too.
Exactly. And that's a good point, because now you're looking at the younger generation. Okay, so we have a company like Four Hands. They're seeing younger people drink less beer, you know, from 21 to 25. You know, when we were 20, even me, I'm 28. When I was 21, 7 years ago, that's all we did was drink beer, you know. And now kids don't want to feel bad. They don't want to make mistakes, like, you know, and stuff like that. So I think that your industry is seeing this huge uptick with, you know, products like that. And the soccer moms, that's a funny point, because it's like, you know, yeah, let's get this. And then the vape pens and all the different things that you guys offer. But you guys got 5 locations. So you're in Winsfield to Dogtown to DePere.
South Grand and St. Peter's.
Okay. So how did you identify those? When you got the license, told you had to go to these specific areas?
It's a great question. So like, no, you're basically, so this is why I was saying it's such an expensive game. So in the beginning, you're picking a location per the district, right? And then you're applying. So I was committing to a lease on a building. Now you had kickout clauses if I'm not awarded, you know.
Well, you were already committing leases.
Yeah.
So attached to the license.
Will you allow me to get out for X amount of dollars? So imagine I was going to work every day in the mortgage industry, and I'm very blessed that the mortgage industry was at its height, right? Mm-hmm. Like rates were so low. I mean, a 2-year-old could have got a mortgage from someone, like as far as like taking the application. But I was cutting 5 different checks for leases, right? Because I applied for 5 dispensaries. Plus, I had put a deposit down for the building in Cuba, Missouri, a significant deposit. So I'm just paying every month. So I'm making a paycheck from the mortgage industry. And people are like, you got to be killing it. Like, you should buy a Ferrari or Lamborghini. I'm like, yeah, my Lamborghini is actually going out the door. And I love cars, but it's just, it wasn't the time. And I still don't have one, by the way, if anyone's curious. So I was sitting there cutting the checks right back to these leases, because you have to securitize it. And so, like, when you submit it to the state,
because they don't want to have cannabis. Some of them don't.
Correct.
So that was, if you're going to be here, we're going to charge you twice as much. You know?
Correct. Yeah. And so here I am, because when you apply to the state, what the state wanted to see is you've made a full commitment. Versus, well, if you give me these licenses, then I'll go do it. That's not how it works. They wanted to make sure that your net worth was at a certain level and you had committed to these leases. And you were fully committed to being a cannabis
partner.
Company in the state of Missouri, which I do love them for that.
Yeah,
because it weeded out literally a lot of people that just were like, well, yeah, I want to be in the cannabis industry. Right. And so it just allowed the serious entrepreneurs to be in the game.
So you mentioned competition. Obviously, there's some really big players in town. But did you have anybody that mentored you through the process, that anybody that you can shout out that was a great mentor in that industry that really helped you, stood out to you?
No one, like, locally. It was just some folks from Native Roots in Colorado that kind of just helped, mm-hmm. and some of them worked for us.
Yeah.
But obviously, I've made friends with a lot of people in the industry. And I love supporting all cannabis companies in Missouri,
mm-hmm.
Whether they're the big verticals or the smaller ones. I mean, our goal is always kind of be like a mom and pop shop, right? I don't want to become like a big, giant corporate type mm-hmm. cannabis company. That's just not my plan.
Right.
It just loses its, you know, hometown feel.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of big players in town. And, you know, we've just learned how to, like, all get along and mm-hmm. support each other. Because at the end of the day, yes, we have a bunch of products, but so does a lot of people. So variety is key. When you walk into a dispensary, you want to be able to have variety. And I don't have everything everyone else has, and they don't have what I have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to have those handshake agreements where, like, hey, we'll buy from you if your product sells. And, of course, it's a test. I mean, just because they buy from me doesn't mean your product sells. I mean, there's marketing. A lot of marketing, by the way, goes behind it, and mm-hmm. pop-ups and education.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's the same with restaurants. You know, if we're looking at St. Louis, there's a lot of places that do great food.
Yeah.
But it all comes down to service. Who makes me feel the best when I go there?
Right.
You know, so I go to these certain restaurants. I could name them all day, but there's certain restaurants that know my name that I go to all the time, that they bring my order out. They know exactly what I'm drinking. They ask about my daughter. They ask about my wife. Like, those are the restaurants that have that service. You know, everybody has gummies that are good. There's some that are better,
yeah.
you know, but it's like it all comes down to service. And that's what you said, creating that mom and pop feel. It's nerve wracking for the soccer mom to walk in there. You know, or the old lady that had never, you know, tried cannabis to go walk in there. You have to break the wall down when they go in there yeah. and make them feel good, you know, and that comes down to your bud tenders, your managers, even the person that checks the ID right at the front door. That's
absolutely.
The first impression.
You know, what's really funny you say that, because in our other stores, the way they're located, people just walk in. In my DePere store, because it's more in a influential area, you know, compared to some of the other ones, at least how people see it as a standalone building, people usually don't park in the front. They park in McAllister's, or they'll park.
They walk some,
and then they kind of walk in. I see them, like, you know, because I'm in there sometimes, and they'll have a hat and glasses. And I'm like, you're not committing a crime. Right? And they're there by topical cream. I'm like, yeah. You didn't even do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the big stigma. Like, when we were going into pair, like, some of the people that were against us, and you're going to have it in any business. And that's okay. It's fair. And I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the comments I heard was, you know, you're going to be handing out candy to kids in the park because the park's around the corner, and mm-hmm. people are going to be doing bong hits in the parking lot. I'm like, no, they're not.
Right.
Like, any cannabis user that's listening to your show, mm-hmm. when they buy their product, they're not doing it in their car.
Right.
You know, they're going home.
Yeah.
Like, they're not lighting up a fat joint in their car and just sitting in our parking lot. First of all, it's not even allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Second of all, they don't do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they want to get comfortable, you know,
exactly.
whether they have their food going
mm-hmm.
or their day's almost over. You know, if you're stopping at noon and, you know, let's say you work at Edward Jones
yeah,
or you work at the mall, more than likely you're not going to light up a joint before you go back to the office,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're a financial advisor, right? It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And if you are, I don't want you to be my financial advisor
exactly.
because we're going to miss a few steps.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I would hear, like, we're going to hand out candy in the park. I'm like, this isn't Halloween. Like, we're not doing that,
mm-hmm.
right? But now that they're seeing the store open there and that there's not all this crime that they thought it was going to be. And you know, these things, like, at least the way our stores are built, I mean,
mm-hmm.
they're built very well for security. Because security is our number one concern. And that's
yeah.
our most biggest expense in our industry, security.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've read some stories. Riverfront Times is always posting some stories. People, like, driving through the back door of these places trying to, like, do crazy stuff. Not yours, but, like, just other ones around town.
Well, some of these stores, yeah. unfortunately, this is what I was trying to get at earlier. Like, they didn't take the time to invest into the building.
Yeah.
So everything we have is, like, steel reinforced. Like, you can't drive through it. Like,
mm-hmm.
the bollards in the front. I mean, your car is not going to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
Bulletproof glass. And I'm not saying it to scare people,
yeah.
but to kind of show them that it's secure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk into the checkpoint and you're acting like a fool, you're just going to get locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cops are on the way.
Yeah.
And a lot of our locations, the police station is literally around the corner. So that was a little bit of a strategy also for us.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want our clients to feel safe and secure when they're walking into a cannabis store. And I've been to some out of state. And it's wild. Like in Arizona, I mean, not to name names, but I've walked and it's like open door.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a nightclub. It's an indoor-outdoor feel.
Right.
Some guy will check your ID and you just walk in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just wide open. Like, there's no, the front door is just wide open.
Yeah.
Like, you could literally, like, grab stuff and run out of there.
Right.
And I'm like, I didn't feel safe at all, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, that, I think in Chicago there was a few like that, too, downtown Chicago. They just had the garage door open.
Yeah.
It was just, like, pop. It was, like, a bar. It was, like, a mixed-use place or something. What about, I want to talk about entrepreneurship a little bit more because, you know, you were in the mortgage industry, but, like, if the young people that listen to our show, we have a lot of people, you know, between the ages of about 25 and 35 that are listening to the show, a lot of people are stuck at these jobs that they're unhappy with. Maybe they are at Edward Jones, which they're going to listen to this and they're going to be mad at us, but
no, it's a great, it's actually a great company. Yeah.
No, they're a great company, but maybe they're at a job that they're not happy with. Maybe they're making, you know, high six figures, but they're still not happy. What advice would you give to somebody to take a risk to join, to, you know, to start their own business and, you know, what would you leave them with?
You know, the biggest mistake that I made and the advice I would say is, take a deep breath and go slow, right? And I didn't. And I failed at a lot of businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And find someone that's already an entrepreneur and has kind of got it figured out and ask if they would be your mentor, mm-hmm. right? I know there's all these places and platforms you could pay for, you know, from Tony Robbins to Grant Cardone. No knock on them at all, right? And for some people that works. I'm more of a one-on-one, you know, local type feel, right? So find someone, but go slow. Take a deep breath. Like, everyone wants to be a multimillionaire, like, overnight, you know? It's just like, I need to figure out how to make $1 million tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you're going to fail, right? Mm-hmm. Just say, hey, like, I've got $1,000. What do I do with it? I want to start my own business. And there's a million different opportunities out there, right? And I'm watching these young folks making these videos on TikTok and they're like 14 and making like 6 million or 10. I'm like, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing and good for them, yeah. right? But there's so many other businesses out there and services, you know, but we live in a world, like you were saying earlier, where you can communicate with people at a mass level very fast,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it's called Instagram. Yeah. I mean, it's called Facebook, Snapchat. I mean, TikTok, it's just easy.
Mm-hmm.
But take a deep breath.
Right. That's a good piece of advice. And then if you weren't in the industry that you're in now or mortgages, is there another business that you would like to be in at this moment that you see has a lot of potential?
Well, my favorite thing, and I'm still in it, is real estate. For me personally, I love commercial real estate. I own a handful of buildings.
Why commercial over residential? It seems like residential is hot right now, like apartments.
Residential is hot. I hate to say I'm a lazy guy when it comes to like dealing with certain issues, but I am a lazy guy when mm-hmm. it comes to... I don't want to deal with plumbing issues or the roof's leaking daily or like I let someone in. Next thing you know, like they're stopped paying rent and I can't get them out.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear these crazy stories. It's a big market. And for those that have the patience for it, great.
Mm-hmm.
I like commercial buildings where I have orthodontists, divorce attorneys. They typically don't just like trash your building and like not pay the bills, right? Mm-hmm. Because everyone needs their teeth clean. Mm-hmm. Like a Clarkson Eye Care style office buildings. I love that kind of stuff because, like, I've got an oral surgeon that just renewed for 10 years. Well,
mm-hmm. they're good.
Yeah. And he's been a doctor with a surgeon for 10 years.
And they're
going
to do the upgrades to the place, too. And
correct. So
like
they
that.
Really, they take yeah. good care. For me, it's just a comfort level where I'm not getting all those crazy calls at night.
Right.
And the real estate's always going to appreciate, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I like. Mm-hmm. But I've also started, like, looking into, like, this e-commerce world of like Amazon, you know, like I see all these young folks doing it and man, that's a big market.
With drop shipping and stuff
yeah,
like that.
It's
like
amazing.
Creating stores and,
correct.
You know, handling products. Yeah.
So that's a big market. But I also saw during COVID, like Rolexes, like they quadrupled in price and car prices.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's a bigger bankroll you have to have.
Yeah. I think the home service industry is like huge right now, like roofing, decks, kitchens, bathrooms, basements. Like there's not that many people that are starting new ones, like
correct.
New firms that are doing really good work.
Just anything yeah. home related, even yeah. landscaping companies. Like if mm-hmm. you know, I used to mow lawns back in the day and
mm-hmm. yeah,
I tell you what, that's a tough job,
oh, yeah.
right? Because it's not riding the lawnmower, it's the cleanup and the picking up and the mulching and the trenching.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually the hard work, right? Building
yeah.
retainer walls.
Yeah, I think real estate's interesting, especially in St. Louis. There's like a lot of untapped potential in certain areas that, you know, even near the Busch Stadium, there's a lot of
there
places
is.
That could be eventually be something special.
And I
yeah.
love all these like yeah. historic buildings we have in St. Louis. And,
yeah.
You know, for people to like bring them back to life, even like these little lounges, you
yeah.
know, and I've always wanted to get into the consumption lounge sector. I just, you know, that's going to take a little bit more work. And there's a few of them I heard that are popping up.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Like, I guess I don't have enough experience to see, like, you go into a consumption lounge and, you know, like, when you go to, like, let's say the Ritz-Carlton cigar room, you're not going to get high from the smell of cigars. And for some people, it might bother them. But, I mean, they got good ventilation. But if you go in a room and everyone's smoking a joint.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure you're going to get really stoned.
But you're right? going there, but it's strictly for that.
Yeah.
You know?
So, like, what's your tolerance, right? So, that's probably a smaller market.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think there's a lot of areas of St. Louis that you can have potential in.
Is that the future of, like, because you mentioned you want to expand, so you can buy other places, but, like, is lounges going to be something that is that legal in St. Louis now to have
it
lounges?
It is. Yeah, yeah. It is. It's,
I know there's a couple guys that do, like, underground stuff, like, all through, like, all that. I didn't know if it was legal.
Correct.
Or not
no, it's legal. It's, again, like, you have to be okay more with... research has to be done for me personally, right? Because, like, how big of a market is that?
Yeah.
Right? If you have, like, my tolerance, like, I make it in there 5 minutes, right? And, yeah, I'm okay to
hang out there all night. You're not doing your birthday party there.
I just couldn't do it, right? but if it's just acceptable to light up a joint, but it's, like, a cool lounge area, but the joints, like, if you go to the Ritz, you're not allowed to light up a joint. Yes, it's legal in the state of Missouri.
Yeah.
But the Ritz is going to say no, and I'll just use them as an example because I have a cigar lounge. I mean, where else can you really, if you think about smoking, where can you smoke these days?
Yeah, there's only a few bars that are like grandfathered in that don't serve food. You can't serve food if you smoke because the smoke gets with the food.
Correct.
You know? Yeah, it's interesting because nobody like, you know, I remember, and I'm like younger, but like I remember going to like restaurants and people smoked. I'm like, oh, this is gross, you know, and all that. So no, you're right. I think the lounges have a good, it just depends on where it's at. You know,
that's what I like to actually see in St. Louis is like more cool lounges with like great DJs, cool concepts, but more intimate settings.
Yeah. And elevated settings and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big like nightclub, like over the top. Now, I have done that and I used to love that. But like for anyone who's ever been to Vegas, like, I mean, like it's the capital of like crazy nightclubs in Miami. It's just I can't be in a place where there's like 6,000 people.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather be somewhere where it's like, you know. 100, 150. And I feel like St. Louis has a lot of room to grow in that area.
Yeah, there's a new spot in Clayton called Carbon.
Yeah, like I belong there. Yeah.
Oh, you go there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard about that. I just read about that.
It's very intimate. It's not a, I mean, they'll play live music. I mean, it's great for networking.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a cool little cigar area. They serve dinners. I got a, I mean, everyone's very professional and, you know, it's been great for networking. But besides that, I mean, I've kind of outgrown some of the other places, you know, and it's not a knock on them. It's just I'm getting older, man.
Well, there's not a space like a Soho or a Soho House, you know, where like you have
like
a spot.
Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, or in Nashville. And they have one in Nashville now where you pay a membership. You get this spot where you can take meetings during the day. You can drink coffee and then your wife can come after work and you guys can go out for drinks at this one place that's private. It's elevated. It's nice. I think there's a space for that. I think that's what Carbon's trying to hit. There's a place out in Fenton called Adventure Unknown. It's like more of like it's a membership and then, you know, it's private. The bar is open. You serve yourself at the bar. So you just go there.
Oh,
and
that's
kind of
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you want to go take a meeting.
I haven't served myself yet.
Yeah, not yet. Like, but I mean, I don't know if that's cool or not, but I mean, it's cool. But
I think some people have heavier pours than others.
Exactly. Exactly. And like the membership, I'm like, shoot, some people could drink that membership in one day.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
But yeah, man, I appreciate you for coming on. It is the STL Bucket List show, though. So just a little bit about the STL Bucket List is, you know, we highlight the people, places, and events that make St. Louis special. We've created this brand by highlighting small and local businesses all across St. Louis. We're big foodies. That's how we started. We were highlighting restaurants. We were doing interviews with chefs and even on the show and stuff like that. But I want to hear your STL Bucket List. You're not originally from here. So what's your favorite, you know, places to go out to eat? What are some of your bucket list events to do in St. Louis or even just things to do general, like games or specific games like that? So,
well, it's funny, even though I'm not from St. Louis, I grew up as a diehard Cardinals fan and it's all because of Ozzie Smith, right?
Oh, really?
Because he would do the backflips. Yeah. And I just thought it was the coolest thing growing up as a kid.
He just came out with a drink called backflip. It's like energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a
seltzer
or something.
I'm a huge Cardinals fan and I love opening day. I think I'm like at 17 or 18 opening day balls that I've collected in a row.
Oh, wow. So you'll be there Thursday with this episode.
I will be
comes
there.
Out
yeah. I hear it's going to be like 46 degrees. I'm like, really?
Oh.
I'm like, now that changes everything how I was going to dress. But I love the St. Louis Blues. I love what St. Louis is doing with city soccer, right?
Yeah.
I just love it. I just, soccer's so cool. And the handful of games I've gone to, just watching the energy in that stadium, I mean, it's amazing. Like, how cool is that, right? And. Yeah. It breaks my heart that we lost the St. Louis Rams.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a sports guy. So for me, events is more sporting, right? And I like the art festivals, the Jazz Fest in Webster. I love stuff like that. But foodie wise, man, I'm a huge foodie. Katie's Pizza. I mean, I love their food. Recently took some clients there, and she sent a bunch of food. I had asked her if she could make, you know, help me with the reservation, and she sent this like this chicken parmesan. It's got like a little bit of a spice, a little bit of a sweetness. And
I gotta Which location did you go to?
I tried the new one, the Ballpark Village. Yeah.
That one's beautiful.
Yeah. It's stunning, and I'm sure they're probably going to be pretty packed for opening day.
Yeah, 81 days a year they'll be crushing. Like, yeah. It's crazy.
It's a great place. I love Indo. I think it's really cool.
Have you been to Sado yet?
I have been, yeah. And on the hill. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah.
Gosh, where else do I like to I love Ted Drew's, obviously, because I like sweets too. I'm trying to kind of cut back on that. Yeah, there's a lot of cool restaurants and concepts in St. Louis. You know, Bar Napoli, like the Napoli side, it's just in Clayton. I've known them forever, and I just love their salads and their steaks. You know, it's a
I just went by the district today, and they have the new pizza spot coming in there, the Napoli Bros Pizza over in the district.
Oh, really?
St. Charles or St. Louis or Chesterfield.
You know, a pizza that I recently tried. I'm a huge pizza guy. That's my favorite food. It's Rosé by Pino.
Okay, yeah. That's his new spot. So he owns Pino over in Clayton.
Yes.
He opened that new spot. I didn't know they did good pizza there.
Wow. Yeah. I went off the grid and I ordered the pizza. Everyone else was ordering like, you know, calamari and octopus. And of course, I'm like, I'm going to try your pizza.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting another one and I took it home. It was that good.
Dang.
What kind of
pizza was it?
It was a traditional pepperoni, and the other one I think I got was like the margarita pizza, if I recall, but it was so good.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, like this pizza is
Do you
legit.
Like authentic, like brick oven pizza? That's what you like?
I do. I like a little crisp.
Yeah.
I don't, if it's got a flop, it's just not my thing.
Katie's got a good one, but Pizzeria DeGlorio in the hill, on the hill, has like a really authentic
I have not tried that, but I heard it's good.
I get that for takeout all the time. So
and do you ever go to Charlie Cheeto's?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's on the hill. That's
pretty
legit.
That's our date night spot. So we go to the other night, our first date night post-baby. We got a babysitter. We went to Sado, did sushi at the sushi bar. And then we went to Charlie Cheeto's, got cheesecake and an espresso martini. And they're serving, like, I love Charlie Cheeto's. So we just walked across the street, went to Cheeto's.
They do a great job.
Oh, my gosh. It's so
amazing. A friend of mine turned me on to them.
People don't talk about those restaurants on the hill. They want to, like, look at the new spots. Like, oh, this space is new. It's a James Beard Ward. It's like, no, just go to the hill. They've been doing it for 50 years. And they're consistent. And they take your coat off when you walk in. It's just different.
And I'm not a chain person. Like, have I gone to chains? Yeah. And I'm not here to knock on them, you know, because that's where someone wants to meet or the business meeting.
Yeah.
But I love local flavor, so that, you know, it fits right with what you guys do.
Have you went to – you need to make a reservation for Esca on Del Mar. It's Ben Perimba's new restaurant. It's in the Del Mar Maker
District. I heard about that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I'll probably never get in.
Yeah.
I just got into Wright's Tavern.
I'll get you in there. Yeah, I'll get you in there.
Have you been to Wright's?
No, because I are on our team, so we get reservations on our team. We got six people on our team, and some people end up going, and then I don't get to go, and then
I have had the privilege of getting into Wright's back to back weekends.
Really?
And I had a business meeting, then I went out again, and I gotta tell you,
it's fire.
I don't know what they do with their Caesar salad. I've never had a Caesar salad that tasted that good, and their crab cake is probably the best crab cake
I've
ever had in my entire life. And I just got back from a trip.
Yeah.
In St. Bart's. And you talk about like being a foodie, like their food was amazing. But
did you get the ice cream sundae? Everybody's been telling me about that. You said you were a sweets guy.
No, I did. I got that.
He said, come on, man.
And I couldn't believe
I've been trying to get him
was.
On the podcast, Matt, that owns that. Matt owns that and Louie, because Louie's
amazing.
Too.
Yeah. And I love Kit Kats. So I see Kit Kats on there. I'm like, I'm like, do you have any more Kit Kats with this sundae?
Yeah.
But then like yesterday I went and like did like an extra workout. I was like, I still think that Sunday is with me, but man, it's okay to have it once in a while. There's no way I could do that like on a daily.
No,
but the crab cakes and the salad, I could do that, and the oysters, it's amazing.
There is so much good food in St. Louis. We talk to these chefs on the show, and we have like, you know, for the amount of people that live here, I feel like we have so many good restaurants.
We do.
It's so hard to choose. Like, you want to support friends and you want to support
Bar Mar is good too, if you've been there.
Oh yeah.
Fantastic.
Bar Mar is incredible. Spanish, Spanish food. So he's opening. Ben's a good friend of mine. He's opening Olio back up.
Oh, okay.
So they're moving it to Del Mar.
Man, I'm going to have to just start texting you for everything.
Yeah. No, I got you.
You got the hookup.
I got you. I'll get you in there. And then, really anywhere. I mean, we go out to eat. I don't go out as much anymore. So, like, all these people invite me out to these openings, and I can't go because I got a good babysitter. And
yeah.
It's hard.
You got a few years of just getting adjusted.
Yeah.
Well, in the beginning. Well, it's just hard. Like, I remember, when our daughters were born, it's just hard to just hand them off.
I know.
You make 15 calls that night, and
yeah.
is everything okay? And next thing you know, you're eating dinner at 6 and you're home by 7:30. Yeah. I mean, you're like speed ordering.
Oh, it's right? Not. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's not like we're getting pictures sent. Now we have these pictures and they're like, all right, you ready to go home? We're like, yep, you know, get one drink, go home.
Yeah. When I was having kids, there was no pictures. Like text, I mean, text message was kind of just evolving.
Yeah, like, we have FaceTime and stuff like that.
At a crackberry.
So. Yeah, the crackberry. but dude, I appreciate you for coming on today, man. I want you to leave, you know, the guests with how they can support you and just tell them a little bit more about the Route 66 story. I know we talked more about you today, and I think that it's good for people to know who you are. But just tell them where they can support you guys at, and then a little bit more about your guys' story.
Yeah, you know, I would love for people that are in the are cannabis users, I would love for you to come and try our stores. We have some of the most amazing staff. We have fantastic reviews, and which that probably makes me the most proud is how customer oriented our staff is. And amazing managers. And so when you walk into one of our stores, we really do take the time, our staff, to ask you the right questions and explain to you what the benefits of everything is, right? And that's what you want, especially if you're a first timer or you're just in there and you've tried things, but you just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're a local company, and we would appreciate it if anyone, you know, would give us a try. And then like when you see like the Ostara product that I brought here, this is just one of our brands.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody lives near our dispensaries, but a lot of dispensaries carry it. So we would love for you to like try our product. And we carry a lot of other dispensaries, full verticals, their products.
Mm-hmm.
And we promote that. So like it's a small community, the cannabis community.
Mm-hmm.
And so we love to support other cannabis companies. So this isn't about just only support us only.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we sell our products to other people. And we appreciate, you know, when people come into our stores and say, hey, you have so-and-so's product, and you know, and we're like, of course we do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things we have in our stores is because of people asking for it.
Right.
So it's not like we're just trying to push our own.
Mm-hmm.
But the Cubana line, our Ostara product.
Mm-hmm.
So
Cubana is the line and it has different flavors and different things on
so
that
Cubana
line.
Is more of our premium flower, right?
Okay.
And the reviews have been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a small batch. And it's done very well. I actually have my own strain coming out. Not
really?
To throw a shameless plug, but it's called Poppy Ham. And it started as a joke, just like everything else, you know. But I took it more serious, and it's tested very high.
Yeah.
I think it's
so what makes it yours?
Well,
like they the name, but then they also like
I you. Kind of like with the person that was creating, you know, the hybrid seed. Like we talked, and I told them like I'm a high energy guy,
right?
So I wanted something that gave you an uplift
that
right?
matched your energy.
Yeah, don't put me to sleep.
Exactly.
And something that was strong, right?
Yeah.
Because I have like really strong work ethic mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted something that kind of represented me a little bit in a fun way.
Yeah.
And since I'm a dad, I didn't want to call it Daddy Ham. I felt like it was weird.
Yeah.
So I felt like Poppy just kind of gave it a little twist. And my name is Ham. So I mean that was easy to pick.
Yeah.
So that's funny. That's gonna be out, I believe,
name.
In a week.
I like that name. So Poppy P-I-P-I.
Yeah.
Or P-A-P-I.
P-A-P-I.
Yeah.
Ham. So I'm excited because it's got to go through all the regulations, the testing, all that. You can't just grow a day one and then throw it out there in the streets.
That's amazing.
But yeah, just, you know, if your viewers that watch and listen, you know, we just appreciate anyone supporting the cannabis industry. And there's a lot of other benefits to cannabis. You know, we have the drinks, the lotions, you know, the creams, all that good stuff. So if you've never checked out a Route 66, give us a try.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode. We'll see you guys next week.
Today, they rep St. Louis, yeah. They rep St. Louis. They rep St. Louis.